This first poem I'm going to read is called Embossed. Arrington de Dionysio is the frontman from the band Old Time Religion. He's on stage looking haunted, as if he wants to infect us all with his haunt, like an extra from the £45 cult hit zombie horror film Colin. He's here promoting his new album, a mouthful of a solo project, Arrington de Dionysio Malaikat Dansinga. Drumming, he's roped in Owen Curtis Williams. Sometimes it feels as if it's impossible to see a band in Edinburgh without seeing Owen unzip his grey hoodie and crack his knuckles getting ready to play drums. He plays with Jesus H. Fox, the Pineapple Chunks, Rob St. John, Randan Discotheque, Benny Hem Hem, and That's What the Old Man Said and He Never Came Back. He's previously played with Emily Scott, Wood Pigeon, Our Ladies of Sorrow, Shere Khan, Eagle Owl, Teasel Lake, and Prose. Then there's these one-off flirtations with visiting bands. I'm panging horrendously, coveting that floaty, amorphous, polygamous creative life, dreaming of enslaving myself all the time to the whims and attitudes of other artists. But through that, well, I don't really know how it works. Owen's his own artist too, a better one because of the must-be exhilarating influence of all these other bands with all their different ideas and styles. Anyway, the truth is, Owen's so in demand because he's a really great drummer, his tongue lolling out, his head flung back, as if his brain had slipped down his chest, and that's what's instructing the battering of the sticks in his fists onto the kit. When I first arrived tonight, he was smoking a cigarette outside, and I did that sort of awkward nod. He's wearing a black t-shirt with a cute, angry, embossed picture of a grizzly bear that I'm sure I've seen him wear before. And this next poem is called Preventative Buckling Over. The poem's like written down the poem. The title's written down the poem as a kind of core, but I can't remember the last bit. Preventative buckling over like a midget gem. The team behind the entertainment-based social network Superfan shut down the site in August 2010 to start a new company. The new company is called Branchout, and the team is focused on building tools to help people help their friends to find better jobs. I said I didn't know Mel personally, but I felt as though I did. She was booed by the audience once in Killarney because she asked via the microphone, "Why Killarney?" in a tone of disbelief. But she didn't mean the contorted snootiness assessed by the crowd, because she really wasn't that type. Mavis Goddard is in hospital, a match day favourite after her image appeared on the big screen doing the Poznan dance, the dance where you turn your backs to the action and ground hop, waving your scarves. There are shirts showing the move, and confused fans have been asking questions online. I miss Josie Gibson at the perfume shop, Cabot Circus, Bristol, 4 to 5 p.m. First come, first serve, but wristbands not needed. And Sean Teal and Alex Arnold from Skins at HMV, plus writer Jess Britton. You can find the basics freely online, and there are also payment services, sometimes with preview stuff before commencing a subscription, which you will need to cancel if you don't want to be charged. These can get you the mobile phone number in some cases, but you should contact through another channel first. Maybe find something unique you can offer, which you offer on a take-it-or-leave-it basis, and make it clear that you will cease communication if ever they desire it. You may just make a friend when they hear that. A good idea is to show up at shows they'll be on, though that can be frustrating if they don't know what to do next. If you know they like a particular drink or snack, be seen eating or drinking that. Maybe they'll ask to try a bit, and then you've got a souvenir for life. David Gandy at Fulham Broadway, Annabelle Goldie at Queen Street, Boris Johnson at Euston with a bicycle helmet, Louis Theroux looking pleased on a hire cycle, Jim Broadbent at Soho Theatre, Michael Platini at Heathrow, Tamsin Egerton at Wimbledon Village, Simon Neal in Airtown Centre. So that's sort of newer stuff, and this the poems I'm going to be reading from now on are from this book too. Okay. This poem's called "People Consider These Showy." People consider these showy beyond words, my newish, pinkish, grey new shoes. Piqued by how good they look, I wear them out and run them down, hammer the soles, bend the tongue, take pity only on my feet, coldly astounded that the spirit is willing, no matter how plush the upholstery, no matter how chastising the finger on your lips, to leap the handsome old ivory barrier. Like ex-sports heroes, like the sobs of combat soldiers, like missing right forefingers, mothers and daughters terrorized by parking attendants, like underwater cities, empty harbors, big blue canvases, pinstripe trousers, a bout of the pathos of demand, like a feeling akin to envy, most people draw blank. And this poem's called "Inspired by My Babysitter's Boyfriend." Inspired by my babysitter's boyfriend, I'm studying the paintings of Lorsor Feitelson. I've had a monstrous week and a half, a week and a half, of large spilling slices. They suck me in to dream like crazy of L.A. As though I were suffering from a slipped disc, I'm cultivating inner tranquility and bright chromatic abstraction. I'm swelling, gently undulating, changing in thickness as I sway. The first I heard of someone behind me was a tic-tac, crunched by an incisor. I know that sound. I know that smell. I know a curtain dropping and bag closing up. The trouble starts because what makes me tick also makes me talk, and therein lies the rub, I wish. this one's called "Sketch for Paper Ball." Crumple this. The birds and butterflies should echo more the knots in my skull, my bow tie, and even the oil-slicked farfalle in my bowl. Maybe the bit behind the ear. A pink pepper, my mother calls it. On the night, could we make the zapping sound louder or more intense or something? The joint between finger and nostril should quiver, like a rubber band mid-flight. But make it look unsure of itself, like a flying cat, the boy who doesn't know where it's headed, survivors on the rocks, and an om under me. 2 years before Blues, a magazine of new rhythms, a bisexual bi-monthly, made him famous. Charles Henry Ford wrote in his journal, "In 2 years I will be famous. In 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 2 years I will be famous. This is my oath. I'm just saying, it's best to try." So this poem, it's called "Poetry is Love in Action," and it kind of undulates or zigzags like that across the page. Yeah. I was at a poetics conference and heard Michael Galston say in a paper on Clark Coolidge, "Poetry is love in action." I jotted it down. I desperately want that formula to be true, like bubble baths make you sleep well. I haven't slept well in the bath since we first got together, because it frightens you to think I might slip under and not wake up. You forget I'm a little large to drown in our bath. I barely fit in, so could I drown? But what kind of love in action's poetry? When I was a teenager, I was hopelessly in love with some guy. This happened rather often with more than one guy, so I don't have one in particular in mind. And I invariably associated a song with him. Sometimes a song I'd heard him hum, or sometimes a song that just happened to play when we were both in a corridor. I'd lie in my bedroom and play the song over and over on cassette tape. Play, rewind, play, rewind, play, rewind. I would do this for hours, and I have to admit that although in the first instance I was filled with desire for the guy, gradually this shifted to being desire to hear the song, until at some point it would dawn on me that my desire was strongest for the gap in between. When I have my finger on the button, I would hear the very familiar buzz. I love that faint whir and my anticipation of the assertive click-click. Desire, through a conviction that it wouldn't ever be fulfilled, focused on the act of rewinding. A repetitive act. Passive. Lonely. And because I would lie there for hours, I sure-footedly can say that I was in the throes of a kind of erotically charged boredom. It's not difficult to speculate why I so fixated on this act. I was obscenely obsessed with my own self-pity, always going back to the start and playing it through again. Schopenhauer said that boredom is just the reversal of fascination, that both depend on being on the outside of something rather than the inside, and that one leads to the other. I certainly felt on the outside as I rewound pop songs on cassette tapes. My intense boredom and equally strong fascination continually outstripped each other, like long-distance runners. When one dropped back, the other steamed on. Or like dough kneaded full of air and knocked back to deflation, and then re-kneaded and so on. I wasn't doing this through a conviction that I'd find backtrack satanic messages that had been leading me and others so frighteningly astray, a la the band Cradle of Filth. Scratch that. Maybe I was. Up in my room, rewinding tapes, I think I must have been looking for messages. My desire so used to pointing outwards fruitlessly towards guys at school that I would be willing to find some kind of response anywhere, be it spooky as you like. I'm not sure whether it comes across for anyone else, but when typing this out, I sometimes felt as though I was back listening compulsively to that buzz again, caught up in conflicting senses of possibility and boring inevitability. I'll maybe just read one more to you. Okay, maybe two more short ones. So this one's called I Collect the Autographs. I collect the autographs of famous redheads. Was D.H. Lawrence a redhead? Was Henri Matisse? Intrigue. In the hope that they are shared, I gargle my dreams so loud it's obscene, and you humour me, a couple of licks short of sensitivity and kindness. Ken Kesey? Swinburne? Getty III? Blake? I got Jane Asher already, and I'm holding out for Will Clark. I reckon my hobby came from somewhere, but I can't for the life of me think where, nor why. Irresolution plus twitchiness. Okay, this poem's called Night's Back. I can't think why, so please don't grill me and ask me to put my finger on it again. But a dream tonight reminds me, this car park is shifting. This car park is shifting about to make room for more spaces, more cars, more baskets, trolleys, and plenty more lines. Why does everything I touch turn? It's always been night. And in the middle of it reading, when you come to the disappearing castle by Charles Madge, all too easy to overshade or not to shelter at all. A spat, a spate, a mere strum, too much as though beating own pan. You know these before they dry, and I do, we need to put the paints away. My finger is red and my face stinging. Let's get a cat.